and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 399. That's quite close to a big number. Should probably do something about that next week. That's only just occurred to me. Me being James Gilmore. Hello. Hello, everybody. You all right? I'm not on my own today. I'm being joined by Emily Soden.
Shock horror.
Recurring character.
I know. I'm like the person that just won't die in the game.
I was going to say an NPC, like an escort mission or something like that. But that's not fair because you do stuff. You don't just, like, follow me around at an annoyingly long distance and then continually walk into a wall and get killed by a zombie. And then I have to get back to the beginning.
Yeah, no, I'm like Emily from Until Dawn. You really want me to die, but you feel bad in killing me yourself.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't feel that bad. Gotta be honest.
Oh, you're so mean. I wanted to do it, but I physically just couldn't bring myself to do it. I was like, I can't shoot her in the face. I just can't. She's a dick, but she's not that much of a dick.
Well, I went back and did a dick playthrough, you see, because the first time I was trying to keep everybody alive, and I think only one person died in my first playthrough. And whilst that's how you would play most games, I think I was kind of missing the point with Until Dawn. Like, you sort of want to engineer deaths. That's sort of what it's about. So I went back and tried, and actually, let's see if I can get everybody killed in ingenious and fun ways. And you know what? That was cathartic.
It's like no one survived. There was no cutscene afterwards.
Nope, just like a good horror movie, everybody dies and I laugh. Nah.
And here we see James for what he is.
Well, we're coming to the 400th episode. I might as well drop the veil at this point. Yes, I play video games my whole life, and violence in video games does, in fact, turn you into a sociopath. They were all right, all those like slightly concerned-looking Mary Whitehouse-type old dears in the 80s. There, true. I said it. I said what everyone's afraid to say.
Yeah, but I'll bollocks it. It's fine.
I saw a car crash once on Burnout, and then I went out and I hit a Ferrari with a sledgehammer. That's how it works. Monkey see, monkey do, you know?
Oh, crazy boy.
I've set back the cause of video gaming several years.
God damn it. Just
you're all welcome.
Make sure the cops don't hear it.
Yeah, all right. So, more video games that will certainly scar the brains and lives of many generations to come were unveiled at E3! We had E3 over the weekend. It was very exciting. If you like Bethesda VR... and if you like Mario and dinosaurs,
that bit was pretty rad. I mean, a dinosaur with a cap on is awesome enough.
Yeah,
but you know, yeah, it would have changed the outcome of Jurassic Park for sure.
If it was just about throwing clothes on dinosaurs, Jurassic Parker. There you go. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh,
I'm gonna take a congratulatory sip of tea now.
Sweet. Jesus, help me. Oh my god, that's awful.
Yum, 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 yum. Delicious, that was that.
Oh no.
I think that's the podcast done for this week. Thank you for listening.
See ya, don't come back next week. Just don't.
No, don't. We're going to talk about E3 in a bit, and also loads of new games that are coming out, including the release of Framed, of which we have one of the developers, Joshua Boggs here, from Love Shack Entertainment, and we're going to be chatting to him all about it, along with the other new releases. Angry Birds games, people, Supercell, soft launch, multiplayer thing, the next Clash Royale, it's all going off! But first, the news. So E3 landed at the weekend this year. Not only was it open to the press, for the first time the public were let in as well on the second day, which I can tell you from having lots of journo friends over there, they loved our 15,000 more people in that big box of a room with no windows. It was great. They loved it.
Yeah, but it's like Gamescom though, isn't it? Like last year was the first Gamescom I did. And the first day where it's just like the press and that, it's like, you know, it's your own little playground, you know, everything seems really busy until you get to day two when all the public come in.
Yeah.
And it's like, realize. It's just like away from the display areas and to the business zone.
Yeah, we all shelter in that bit because it's not even worth going onto the show floor because you just can't move.
No, it's just a sea of people and you know, sweat. It was like 32 degrees.
It's grim. But that didn't stop people from doing the business they were there to do, which is announce a whole bunch of new games. And there was a lot of stuff on the Nintendo side, which gave us cause to be excited. But just to go straight to the mobile bit, get that out of the way first. Big news Alto's Odyssey was revealed properly. We've seen like little trailers and glimpses and bits and bobs, but we've now seen the game properly in action and being talked through by one of the developers. And suffice to say, you've been looking forward to this and thought it looked good, and it continues to look good.
Do you know, I wasn't expecting it to... I don't know what I was expecting, actually, because it was like, oh, it's like Alto, but in the desert, but they've put more things in it, like the air balloon thing where you like ride down the rails, but connected to the air balloons. That's awesome.
It's lovely, isn't it? So in the first game, Alto's Adventure, when you're skiing down the mountain, it's all a snowy mountain, and there'll be bits where you hop up onto, there are poles, and you have like light cables, essentially, and you're grinding the cables. They've got that same mechanic here, but as Em says, it's like there are cables or ropes tied between hot air balloons, and then you grind them, and as you start to grind, the balloons start to ascend, so it gives you this massive air when you leap off the end of it, which looks really fun. All that free-falling stuff, which is where Alto's Adventure kind of lives, the jump, then you're in the air, and then you somersault, and you free-fall. It's those little moments of like, woo! That I think keep people coming back to it. So they're building on that. There's also a little wall-running mechanic they've thrown in as well.
Yeah, what do you think of it?
Oh, I'm up for that. That looks good. Like, it's become the new bow and arrow. You know, there was that time when all games just had bow and arrows thrown into them.
Yeah, it was the whole Katniss Everdeen thing, though.
Yeah, so that was a big trend. And then, like, we've had Mirror's Edge, which had wall running anyway, but it was a big component in, you know, Mirror's Edge Catalyst. And then Titanfall, loads of wall running in that, in a really good way, clever platformy way. And I think now they've brought it into this as well. Anything they can do to add a little extra element to your trickage? Because, I mean, that's what it is. It's like getting as far as you can, but it's all about the tricks and the combination of cool things that you're doing without destroying the flow. Which I think is the most important thing in that game.
Yeah, because it is like, it's like water, the way it goes. Yeah. It's just wonderfully fluid. And it's, is it randomly generated?
I think so, yes. Yeah. Yes, it certainly is. Yeah, it's not they're not authored levels. It's all randomly generated. Like, if they added a section in Alto's Odyssey where you stopped and you kick up your snowboard or whatever, and then you sat down and did like a logic puzzle, that would ruin it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because then there's no... That's just a bit janky.
It sounds like an obvious thing to say, but it is. It just highlights, like, no, you couldn't do that because this game is all about flow. It's all about forward momentum. So anything they can do to keep that going while still adding cool, fun stuff to do. We're all over that. Summer 2017 is the release window. No release date yet, but you can see a video of it that Em's put up in our news channel. Of it running. A good, like, 5 minutes of gameplay, and it's cracking stuff, it appears to be. Sticking with the mobile phone thing, they announced more information about South Park, the Fractured Butthole, snigger, alongside a phone-dedicated CCG game called Phone Destroyer.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that, in honesty. Of all the mobile games that could have been announced in E3, I was not expecting a South Park one.
No, it hadn't occurred to me that they'd do it. But then when you see it up and running, you go, actually, it does kind of make sense, because the first game, Stick of Truth, was kind of lampooning the classic RPG format.
And oh, yeah.
With a love for it, a certain affection for it, but the classic turn-based, you know, almost Final Fantasy-style RPGs. So here, they've obviously noticed Trey and Matt, because they are up with the games industry, and they did a whole episode on free-to-play and mobile, so they're aware of the space. They've done a card game style thing, which, as you've heard us say lots of times in the past, oh, it's another one of these CCG card games where three people line up against one another and you collect the cards and smush cards together to upgrade and yada yada. And they've done one of those, and they're going to presumably make fun of it.
Yeah, I would assume, like, a fair bit of, I don't know, maybe satire. A little bit like that.
Maybe satire. maybe satire. Spoofing. Occasional side gag. Oh, I don't know. Comedy. It's
occasional
such a
joke,
tired,
you know,
format, isn't it? But they'll do what they do. And you can see a little video of it up and running. It doesn't show much. Just shows the cards. And they're introducing everyone going... Because, of course, it's South Park, which means instead of it being, like, mages and stuff like that, it's going to be magicians and choir boys and cops and aliens and pigeons and all that. So that's going to be coming around. I would imagine that'll turn up around the same time the game launches, which I think is just fall-ish area, autumn, something like that.
Yeah, it feels like the Fractured Butthole has been coming out for like years, but I know it's only been like a year.
Well, no, it was delayed a little bit. I think they pushed it back. So, yeah, you're right. It does feel like it's been kicking around for a long time. Right. Now, Nintendo.
Oh, Nintendo.
They had a good E3 by not turning up to E3 and just doing their little spotlight video that they do while everyone else sweats balls in a room.
One E3 by not even being there. It's like, you guys do your thing. We're just going to blow it out of the park because we have the Switch and you guys don't.
To give you the quick rundown of what we saw, Mario plus Rabbids is indeed a thing, as we predicted, and it's a bizarre mashup. Like, I thought the idea of mashing Rabbids with Mario was weird. Until I found out that it's Mario and Rabbids and XCOM.
Yeah, yeah, it got weirder. But weirdly enough, like, when you watched the gameplay of it, like, did you watch proper Easter season for that? It looks, actually genuinely looks kind of great.
It does. It looks fantastic. And I like XCOM anyway, so I've got no objection to that mashup. But it's the demographic crossover. Like, do people who like, because Rabbids is a very young aiming franchise.
Yeah.
As you've pointed out, and lots of people have, they are like the minions of the gaming world. Mm. So, you know, you're aiming that at like 6-year-olds and stuff. Like, really young folks are into Rabbids. How many of those young folks are into, like, turn-based strategy? How many of them are, like, playing XCOM? Which is quite an involved game, tactically speaking and everything. So, it's like, I don't know what the Venn diagram on that one's a bit weird. Like, Mario's just, for everyone.
But they must have just put names in a hat and just been like, okay, everyone pick a name. And then just sort of did a Mad Lib of games. Yeah,
it does feel like that. However, like you said, the result looks good. Like, I would like to play that. I like XCOM. I like Mario. This, you know, these things are fine. I will tolerate Rabbids. So I'm interested to see what they do with it, but just a peculiar property.
Yeah, I like how it's like, it's mainly Mario, but with Rabbids kind of stuck in there. Like, the Rabbids aren't Rabbids. They're kind of merged into the Mario world. So they've got, like, Donkey Kong, Rabbid, and all the Rabbids have kind of Mario clothing and stuff, but they're still in the Mushroom Kingdom, but the Mushroom Kingdom's gone a bit weird.
Which is the correct way to do it. So, like, the Rabbids in as, like, little cosplaying Mario fans into the Mario universe. You wouldn't do it the other way around.
No.
But you can see footage of it running, and yes, I'll play that. I'll give that a go. Looks like fun. Metroid Prime 4 got big whoops and cheers by basically turning up in the form of a logo.
Yep.
That's it, really?
It was the most anticlimactic trailer, just sort of a vast space, and then 4 came up, and then Metroid came up afterwards.
Everyone loses their mind, and then goes, oh, wait, that's it. Oh, all right, fine. So there will be a Metroid Prime 4, that's good. I'm going to play 3 on my Wii in a bit once I'm finished with Mario Galaxy, but that's good news for Metroid fans if they are on a home console or on a Switch. However, Metroid Samus Returns is coming to the 3DS, which is effectively a remake or reimagining of the 1992 game Metroid 2 Return of Samus, which has been given a bit of a tweak and a bit of a makeover and is now all, like, properly 3D-ish. Like, before, I think it was more of an isometric viewed thing, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing is, it didn't even have to, like, announce it during the spotlight. This is all the stuff that came at the Treehouse live after Super Mario Odyssey aired.
So you'll get a little mobile entry. I haven't played the original, so I can't pretend to speak with any authority on it, but you can, again, see the trailer, see the video that Em's posted up. But the thing that everyone kind of went, ah, you've just won E3 there, was the reveal of Super Mario Odyssey. We'd seen some gameplay of it before, primarily the bit where Mario's running around the GTA-looking city, and we all went, weird. But they won us back with the central mechanic of the game. As we saw, Mario runs around, and as well as doing the usual platform, butt-stomping, coin-collecting, double-jumping antics, he throws his hat at stuff. And when the hat lands on that thing's head, be it a Goomba, or be it a massive dinosaur, you take control of that Goomba or massive dinosaur, and that bit, that little clip of him throwing it at a T-Rex, and the T-Rex going, and then running around like Mario, everyone just went, yes, all right. So they emptied their wallets, and they threw it at the screen and said, come, give it to me.
Yeah, that's quite accurate. My favourite part of the whole thing, like watching the Treehouse Live after the spotlight presentation, they showed off this bit where you kind of run around, but as soon as you nip into a pipe, you suddenly go 2D in a 3D environment.
Yes, so it's like it looked like old
Mario.
You go
up on the wall. Yeah, but the transition is what really got me. Like when he's going up the wall, up the wall, up the wall, and then suddenly hop out of the wall and you're 3D again in a 3D environment. It was brilliant.
Well, it's almost like those bits in A Link Between Worlds where Link goes flat, like the paintings, and scuttles around the wall.
Yeah.
It just looks like back to the experimental, weird Mario-like Super Mario Galaxy that I've been playing, where they move away from the established 2D classic Super Mario World, Super Mario stuff, and go, no, what weird thing can we do? And throwing your hat at things to possess other things, being the core mechanic, like, oh, brilliant. Especially as when you throw the hat at things, whatever it lands on, like, gets a little Mario moustache and whatnot, and starts, like he's dressed up like Mario, and you're like, oh, this is adorable. Someone published, I think, John Monday published an article which was kind of the plus and downsides of everything. The only downside, he said that, like, and it's true, that New Donk City thing, which is the city that looks like a realistic New York with Mario running around it, continues to look weird.
Yeah, in honesty, like, the bit where they go into, like, the desert kingdoms and things like that, that looks okay because it's not like based on real life or anything. But the bit where they showed off, like when they were running around the city and stuff like that, it looks, I suppose because it's Mario running around in the city, it looks really out of place. And also, I don't know how big it's going to be.
I mean, even like Mario and Rabbids is weird, but they're both cartoony, colourful looking things. And they don't look weird standing next to each other, whereas Mario standing next to a human looking dude in a bowler hat does look strange.
Yeah.
But, we'll see what they have to give us. Plus the fact that, you know, Metroid Prime 4, great to reveal the logo, but we don't know when it's coming and how far away it is and all of that. But broadly speaking, we think Nintendo had a great showing and got people excited about the Switch and the prospects of the future and the prospect of more games, which I think is the important thing people were worried about.
Nintendo did a great job, but they kind of, like, do you find that everything they announced was, like, for 2018, like the new stuff, I mean?
Right, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah, there is that. I mean, they're still pushing out their launch lineup, inverted commas, so ARMS and things like that are still, you know, drifting out onto the store, and Splatoon 2 and everything. But yes, it's probably more 2018, so I'll wait till then, I think, to grab my Switch.
Yeah, though to be fair, Overcooked is coming in the summer, and I'm Overcooked and Stardew Valley, and I'm just done. I'm done. That's good for me. I need to rage in public trying to cook a burger when someone's getting in my way.
Oh, lordy. Framed came out in 2014 and was something of a favourite among the PG office. Today marks the release, or just a day after the release, of Framed 2, its follow-up. We're lucky enough to be joined by Joshua Boggs, who is one of the developers of that game. Thank you for joining us today, Joshua.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
2014 was obviously a big year for you and your team, given the fact that Framed made a big splash, not just within the mobile world, but within the wider world. I mean, let's start with the lovely thing. What was it like having Hideo Kojima say it was his favourite game of the year?
Yeah, so I think, like, personally, you know, I got into games playing his video games, right? Like, playing Metal Gear 2, which I, in my controversial opinion, is one of the best games ever made.
That is controversial. And then, the second one.
and it just made me absolutely sure what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think in that regard, like, it completely affirmed everything that I had kind of put into making this game. But more importantly, like, it really humbled me. Like, it made me remember why I wanted to make games. Because particularly at that time, and I think still now probably, this really, like, kind of bubble around indie games and the kind of, like, attention you get out of it. And I think, like, at the time, like, I didn't realize it, but it really did kind of consume me a lot. So, yeah, it was a really good, humbling experience, as well as being really affirmative. And, like, I think for those kind of reasons, like, it made me reevaluate, like, why I make games. Yeah.
And the game itself was an unusual thing, and I think it caught people's attention because it felt like a bit of a breath of fresh air. I mean, if people haven't played it, it essentially looks like the page of a comic book almost, and you're rearranging the cells, the panels on the comic, to allow a character usually to run from one panel to another without being arrested or chased by dogs or, you know, cycling off into a river or something like that.
You're right, right.
What gave you the inspiration for the idea in the first place? Where did the concept come from?
So it was interesting. It actually came from an idea that I couldn't work out how to get working. It was an idea where, so normally in video games, right, you are in a very set virtual environment, you know, like a beautifully detailed map. And the things that you do interactively are defined in how you interact with that environment. You know, do you run? Do you jump? Do you talk to this person? Do you shoot this other inanimate 3D object?
Yeah.
So what I wanted to try and do was, like, how can you flip that on its head? How can you, like, set the actions as being concrete instead? So run, jump, whatever. So from an interactive context, it became, well, how do you make that interesting? Well, you know, what if maybe you were changing the, like, meaning behind them or the context they were happening in? And so, you know, like, that was a really high level idea. And to be honest, that kind of just sat there for a long time and I shelved it. And then I read, Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics, and, he talks about this thing called closure, which again is like a really great book. It's not just for comics. If you make anything, it's worth reading. And in his chapter on closure, he talks about the importance of the reader or the participant injecting their own imagination into it. And he uses, for example, like comic, like the gutters in comics. So the white space in between each panel as an example. Yeah. And that, like, I was reading that at the same time as having this idea. And that was the initial spark. And pretty much, like, within the space of 5 minutes, like the whole core concept in general was fully formed, and I'm pretty sure somewhere I still have the scribble of that somewhere, but I need to go look for it, yeah.
Well, it is one of those things that immediately makes sense within about 10 seconds of picking it up. It's got that, we often talk about it on the podcast, but the idea of like the show don't tell and silent storytelling,
exactly,
and the ability
yeah.
to just like,
yeah.
you don't need a big long tutorial, you just put your finger on the screen, move a panel, the other one slips back into the dead space, and you're like, oh yeah, I get this, what this is, this makes sense.
Right, yes, yeah, exactly. And I think what you just said exactly kind of sums it up, that idea of filling in dead space, but that dead space is equally as important as the space that you are focused on.
So building on that idea, we've now got Frame 2, which has appeared. How did you expand the concept to keep what you liked about the original, but also bring something new to the latest incarnation?
Yeah, so I mean, it was interesting because the first one, we didn't really know too much what we were making. To be honest, like we had some idea, but outside of that, it was all kind of just in my head, basically. And some things worked out really well and some didn't. With the sequel, we honed in really, really tightly on what we knew worked really well and just basically eliminated the things that we knew didn't work well. We also had a lot more freedom in terms of what we knew could work and what didn't work. So we were able to kind of lay out some vague sense of a wordless narrative that was inspired by other works.
Yeah, the story feels bigger this time around because the first one was just you're following the one guy with the briefcase
yeah.
through the whole thing, and this one,
exactly, like the first one is basically I describe it as like just the Mad Max version of a video game, you know, like there is a goal, but to look at the story or the plot is to just miss the point of it.
Sure. It's more about forward momentum, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first one was very much about that. And it helped us a lot because we were still trying to, like, work out, like, what is this game? So, like early days for this game, for example, like, we had this really terrible version that was really slow, very filmic, had, like, camera shake, had, like, very set pieces, and it was just terrible. Which is really bad to play. and it was kind of, it was really like humbling, but also like disappointing because we had this grand idea, but in practice, in this medium, it didn't work. So, right. You know, we had to step back and I think, like, a lot of the things that I've done as a designer working, you know, before this as well, one of the best lessons I learned was from someone that was, like, to remember to listen to your game. Like, your game is literally like a child. Like, you can impose certain ideas onto it, and that's all well and good if it's early stages, but at some point, mm-hmm. when you actually start making it, it's important to listen to the game itself and let the game tell you what it wants to be.
And with the original game, you mentioned that you sort of got rid of the things you didn't like and then improved on the things that you did. Mm. What was one thing that got into the final game, the first frame, where you were like, oh, I wish I'd done that better? And then what was the thing that you did to improve it in frame two?
So it's tricky because I think one of the strongest things about the first one, which is also one of the most divisive things, I would say, is the story / I don't know, like, there's a few levels that are kind of just like set pieces. Like, you just mm-hmm. you just swap two panels. And, yeah. and I feel like it's just like a really ego stroking thing of me being like, look how clever I am, sort of thing. Look how you can change these two things around and how it changes, you know, the flow of events and everything. Which kind of works on some level, but at the same time, like, it just, from an objective point of view, and I think, like, with frame two, like, what's helped is having me stepping back and the rest of the team have always been there, and it's just been kind of, really, the only problem was that with frame one, I kind of probably micromanaged it too much. You know, they really stepped in, and it really, like, made, I think, from a more objective stand-back perspective, better for the second one.
So you're considering, if you can talk about anything related to it, but potentially updates or additions, expanding on the original idea, or are you thinking of an entirely new project?
I can't confirm nor deny that, but right. There is, like, it is something that we have been very, very aware of, and we shipped this game knowing that there would be criticism around that point, that overall the game would be better, but that the criticism would generally be like, well, it's a better version of the first one, but if you've played the first one, then you kind of got the gist of it. It's one of those things where, like, as critics, we can say that. But I think from an actual, like, objective standpoint, it is a much better game than the first one.
Well, it's always tricky with sequels because it's the same but different, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's what people want. And if you go too far in either direction, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
It's like, I think of it a lot like the Arctic Monkeys, right? Like, the first one, like, their first album was great. The second album was the same. And that, like, second album, like, it's a sophomore problem, right? Like, yeah. Like, you're going to get criticized. It doesn't matter what you do. You either completely reinvent yourself and get criticism for that, or you don't invent yourself enough and get criticism for that. So we think kind of objectively we've struck the right balance in general, and we take the criticism on board, but also we kind of are aware of a lot of things that public knowledge too, so we're kind of pumped for that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you received some, like, plaudits as well as from the press, from your people within the industry, which is obviously lovely. When it comes to games that you play yourself in your own time, or things that you're inspired by outside, like, within the world that you're in, do you play a lot of mobile games? Was mobile always the platform, and are there ones that you're particular fans of?
I do play a fair amount of mobile games. I'm trying to think of ones I've played recently, because we've been in crunch mode, so it's just been, like, hard to kind of take a breather. So usually, like, I'm a bit guilty of this, because I'm developing right now on mobile. I have this kind of innate feeling not to go on mobile again. So for that reason, like, I've been playing a lot of console games. Recently, it's been Persona 5.
Oh, really? Okay.
Persona 5's been really enjoyable. From the mobile front, if the Switch counts, I've been playing a lot of Mario Kart, Zelda, and then outside of that, I just finished Monument Valley 2. I've been playing Splitter Critters, which is kind of, like, similar-ish in terms of, like, making barriers deframed. I like looking at things that kind of take similar ideas in different directions a lot.
I'm quite glad that got pushed by the App Store, because it was one of the things that turned up. We do these big indie pitch events.
Oh, yeah.
where people come up and show their games. They're small indie developers, and it's kind of like a competition. And they were one of the people who came up and I think won, because it was a novel, interesting idea. And there's another one where, similar to Framed, you drag your finger along the screen, you create this the swipe, you slash the environment in two, and you pull one side and join it together, and you go, oh yeah, like, right, done, tutorial done, I get this.
Yeah, it makes sense. It speaks to a universal understanding of space and time that we as humans understand. And I think like, it knows exactly what it is. It's a game about moving the environment in ways that aren't traditional, and it does it really well.
Old Man's Journey had a similar vibe as well. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
But that's also about dragging the environment around to make connections between the foreground and the background.
Yeah, there's a couple of games I have on my phone which I'm like, the next long haul flight I have, which is like in a few weeks, I'm going to finish that one. So that's like the next one to play. But from what I had played of it already, and I know the developers too, like, it seems really, really good, and I'm really excited to play that one as well.
And as E3 has just gone by, I don't know if you had the chance to catch any information coming out the back of it, but is there anything you're particularly looking forward to?
Oh man, okay, I'm gonna fanboy out here. You ready? Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
Oh man,
there's been a lot of that. We just talked about how Nintendo turned up with a short video and won.
No, I know, like, I'm glad I'm now, like, 30 plus. I've seen a few iterations now of Nintendo to be like, you know, they have a really, really, like, they blow your mind year, and then a kind of, like, a down year. And this is the blow your mind year again. And I'm so happy. I don't really have any allegiances to any platform or anything, but it's just, they do such a good job of capturing, like, a specific emotion. Like to me, Mario is joy. Like, everything in the game is joy. The way you, like, interact with the flagpole, and it makes a noise, and it whips around, and little particles come out. Like, every moment, every little movement is, like, filled with a specific emotion, and I feel that maybe internally they have this idea of this game, like, the overall theme is this emotion. And, yeah, for Mario, it's, like, joy. And so every time there's a Mario game, I'm really excited.
Well, it sounds like you're working on stuff in the future that we can't talk about. Is it safe to say that maybe Framed might continue in some form or another? Or
it is safe to say that it is possible that there will be more stuff in the future, yes.
Nicely done. Very diplomatic. Well, we look forward to whatever you guys produce in the future, and thank you for joining us today, Joshua.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Joshua there from Love Shack. I realised last week we mentioned that we were going to be talking to the guys from Us 2 about Monument Valley 2, which we were going to do and had talked with them until we realised that they've just released Monument Valley 2 and are now not in the office or anywhere near anything that looks like work, I expect, for the next week or so. So we will catch up with them. We've talked to them about it, but that'll come a little bit later.
They're out there enjoying life, okay?
They really are. And deservedly so. But great to talk to Josh, and fittingly, we should talk about Framed 2 itself, which we've reviewed over on PG, and given a very good review to, because, once again, we enjoyed it. I think you and I have both played the first game.
I very much enjoy the mechanics of it. Like, it baffles me. I was playing Framed 2 the other day, and I just, there's one puzzle which baffles me, and I've been stuck in it for like 2 days.
You do get occasional moments like that. But Harry gave it a silver award, saying it was slick, it's entertaining, it's exactly the kind of thing that we need more of on iOS. His only downsides were, some more difficult puzzles which result in trial and error. And maybe because of the widened narrative, it's maybe not as tight as the first game. The first one was a very simple, straight story, and this has got more going on in it. But as we've just chatted to Joshua, I think there's the suggestion that there's maybe more to come from this, which may fill in some of the grey areas and make it seem a little bit more cohesive. But broadly speaking, silver award, sick and entertaining. We liked Frame 2, and you probably will as well. Now, Angry Birds Evolution. I played it as a hands-on when I thought it was just a soft launch. Then it turns out it was a full proper launch, and so you then took up the review mantle. What's this game about?
It's a very easy concept, which turns out to be really addictive, where it's just all of the battles you go through are like isometric slingshot battles, like you would do, like you pull them back and then you kind of watch them fly to smash into the enemies as much as you possibly can, like RPG styles, take their health down.
Yeah.
But you also have to collect birds, and you have to not upgrade them, but like you can merge two birds together, you know, do the old fusion without the dance.
Like those card CCG games where you fuse two crap cards together to boost the other one.
Yeah, basically. And it's, but it like, it costs you money and things like that. Sometimes I really do hate enjoying some free-to-play games because it is a bit of a grind eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually genuinely played Angry Birds Evolution for, I think, about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in one
straight,
sit.
Yeah, in one sitting. Yeah. Which is good that you can do that on a free-to-play game without it shutting you down.
Yeah, well, the next morning I tried again and then it shut me down.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Well, it was short-lived, but I enjoyed it when it did.
I was surprised when I picked it up because there is a game called Angry Birds Action that was released a while back. And it has the similar mechanics to Angry Birds Evolution in so much as, like you say, it's the pull back and bounce them all around, but you're on a, they're all standing on the ground, the birds and the pigs, and so it feels much more like you're playing a kind of Skittles or pinball or something like that.
Mm.
And that bit where you're trying to line it up and get, well, if I hit this bird piggy and then I can bounce off the side and get this other piggy and do a double attack, and then the birds have their own little power attacks that they charge as you play, and then you can launch super attacks. That stuff's all quite good fun.
Yeah, well, I think that's what makes it better than what it like could have been if they didn't include it, because it makes it strategic rather than just pulling and letting go.
But behind it all is that card collecting, character level upping RPG mechanic that we've become so familiar and is often propping up all of these superhero brawlers and Galaxy of Heroes. But interestingly, it's a new cast of birds as well.
Mm, yeah, there's like, I mean, there's like 300 of them, or maybe that's including pigs as well. There's a lot of them. Like in my little collectibles bit, I've got quite a lot of blank spaces, but quite a lot of birds already unlocked. They give you just enough to get you addicted, and then they expect you to spend money so you can get more gems and to like buy big stacks of coins so you can level up, because you can't level up your birds. It's kind of a catch 22 at one point. Like I got well into like the Wonder Bird level.
Mm-hmm.
I ran out of money. And I ran out of scouts, and I couldn't get my scouts back for like 3 hours, and I couldn't upgrade any of my birds because I had no money left, because each time it like costs you 40 coins.
Scouts, to confirm, these are birds you send off into different areas of the map, and they go out and they come back and they say, oh, we've unlocked this, or we found this area or whatever.
Yeah, they like unlock different fights and stuff. Of course, you can earn money in fights, so you kind of need that, but if you don't have the scouts, you can't do it.
Right.
And when I didn't have any money, I couldn't upgrade, and when I couldn't upgrade, I couldn't do the next battle because I wasn't strong enough.
Okay.
So that was the catch 22 right there. That's kind of what stopped me from playing, because I was like, well, I'm not going to wait 3 hours for these to unlock, and I don't want to spend money to, you know, unlock loads of coins and things and blah, 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 because I'm whiny.
So whiny. But you gave it a bronze award, and, you know, as far as free-to-play games go, it's all right for it, but it has the same problems as other free-to-play games. Which isn't a surprise. So Angry Birds Evolution, that's free iPhone, iPad, Android right now. I have played Faust.
Oh, is it any good?
It's all right. It's weird to play it because I always recoil a little bit from games that are very obviously inspired by or based on another game. And there's no getting away from the fact that Faust is Downwell.
Mm.
Like, the art style, the fact that it's a, you know, black screen with white and red characters on it. It is a portrait played air platformer action arcade game where you take control of a little owl and you tap on the left or right side of the screen, and that will cause the owl to flap or bounce in that direction. Much like in that basketball game, the shooty hoops, it feels a bit like that. But the objective is to kill a number of enemies who are flying around the screen by jumping on their heads. They're all firing little guns and that at you. But the net result is you constantly pressing left, right to keep your character in the air, because if you just let go, the owl will just fall to the floor. And as well as avoiding bullet shots, you wind up having to avoid other obstacles, so spinning saw blades and that sort of thing appear. You collect cash, you do power-ups. The little Mario-style pipes will appear as well, and you can find exits on the top, bottom, and right of the level. So it, whereas Downwell was falling, this is flying.
Gotcha.
But there's obvious similarities there, and it's a bit too close for comfort, I think. That said, it actually feels and plays well. Like, it was enjoyable to play. I only played for a quarter of an hour just to get the feel of it. And it's fun because it's fast and it is frenetic and keeping the owl in the air and avoiding everything. You do feel like you're constantly snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, which is quite a nice feeling. Super similar. But we gave it a silver award and said it was sharp and fun, interesting ideas, worth checking out, and I would agree with that, even if one of the ideas is cribbed wholesale from another good game. Faust, F-O-W-L-S-T, that's available iPhone and iPad at the minute. What have we else got? Forma 8. This has been kicking around in trailer form for a long, long time, since 2014.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I think it's been out on other platforms for a while, and now it's finally come to iOS. And did you see this one, or have you played it in any form?
No, I can't say I have.
All right. So this is a silhouette Metroidvania thing where you take control of another floating object, not an owl this time, but a little glowing orb, and you're essentially spelunking around a planet. You're flying through loads of tunnels. You are destroying some of the creatures that are there using this energy pulse that you create by tapping the right side of the screen, and then unlocking doors and realizing you've hit a dead end, but finding a new power, and then going back to the place where you were before, and there's actually a little thing that needs that new power. So you go, revisit the old level, open up a new bit, and off you go. And that's where the Metroidvania label comes from, because it's backtracking and looking at thinking of the big world map in your head and going, I remember 15 minutes ago I was in a place where I had a special thing that I need to destroy rocks, and I couldn't destroy rocks then, but now I found a rock-destroying thing, so back we go. It's very nice, it's kind of chill. You move around slowly because you're floating. It feels like you're almost swimming through water. And that is initially a bit tricky to get the hang of with the floating touchscreen controls joystick, but it works. It's good enough to handle it. I think the criticisms were that there hasn't been any concession to the mobile format, really. So it feels like a console game. It feels like you should be playing it for an hour. It doesn't feel like it's designed for little 5-minute pick-up and play bits. But that's fine. It's not a bite-sized game, as long as you go in knowing that. It was the same with the XCOM port. It's like, this isn't a game you play for 2 minutes at a time. It's a big game, sit down and play it for an hour. But that's alright. If you know that going in, that's absolutely fine. But it plays well, and again, we gave it a silver award. Good mobile port of a good game. Perhaps, you know, if you already have it on a Vita, or if you have the ability to play it on a console, maybe that will be slightly better suited for it. But it still works totally well on iOS and is worth a look. So Forma.8 is the name of that. And finally, the best ones for this week, Mr. Future Ninja.
Yes.
It's well weird, this. It's actually quite nice. I had a quick go. It's got that neon blue and pink aesthetic going on, and it's presented in an isometric top-down view that lets you take control of initially one little character, who is a robot ninja, but then more characters. Because initially, you're guided around a bunch of floating platforms, and you have to get over gaps, you have to press buttons to spin platforms around so you can make bridges to other areas. You have to avoid cameras that are roving in that Metal Gear Solid sort of way. You can see their arc, so you get into the dead spot beneath the camera, wait for it to turn the other way, sneak out the other side. So stealthy, you know, it doesn't move too fast. Then you break another robot out of his little vial, a little tube. And that robot has a different skill. So that robot, if you point in the direction, rather than being able to fire stuff or throw shurikens, like the first robot does, you can jump a certain distance. You kind of warp jump, you blink, to use a Dishonored term, a bit further forward. And that means you can clear gaps, which the other robot can't. So the bit where the interesting bit comes where you have to kind of join the robots together as the same part of one party. So you can take control of them separately and switch between the two robots by pressing buttons on the right-hand side of the screen. Or you can drag the robots together and you can move them as one group, which means that they'll be able to, you know, if one robot is able to blink across the gap, so the other one will as well. So it's got that. I'm reminded of the Lego games when you play Lego multiplayer and one character has an ability to do a hook shot and the other one doesn't. So that character has to go up high, unlock the door, then the character beneath goes through the gap that's on the floor because he's small, and that kind of teamwork thing. Only you're the team. You control all of them. So you're the one jumping between all the different characters.
Yeah, you are the entire team. It's all you.
Exactly. And it's fun because, you know, it's that cerebral, nicely presented, very glowy neon thing. A cute little mechanic that works well. Again, we liked it. It maybe not quite as much, but like Harry said, there are some issues where like the scenery will get in the way of what you're trying to do. There are times when you get stuck and you're not really sure what you're supposed to be doing, which may just be because you haven't got the gist of the game, or maybe because it hasn't signposted what you're supposed to be doing quite as well as it could. The stealth bits can get a bit frustrating because the controls, the movement of the robots, like you're on these platforms, you can fall off and stuff like that. Little bit awkward, not perfect. The robots move very slowly, so you don't have that problem of them just darting off the edge. But there are bits you get around where you think like, I'd quite like a controller for this. So those bits can be a bit frustrating. But the concept is cute and it works and it's a bit cerebral. And a good solid entry, not perfect, but very strong still. So we got a bronze award for that, Mr. Future Ninja. And that is iPhone, iPad and Android, I believe. Okay, that's it for this week. I'm away to the States next week, Em. So I think we might be doing it early next week, you and I.
Oh, cheeky. Wait. Oh, God, is it Pocket Gamer Connects San Francisco?
Certainly is. Certainly
is. Oh, my
God. It's Pocket Gamer Connects in San Francisco, so I'm going to be over there stateside for the whole of that the week following. So if you're out in San Francisco, swing by Pocket Gamer Connects and come and say hello. I'll be there. We can have a chat, play a game or something. It'll be nice.
Sounds like fun.
But we won't miss the podcast, so we'll speak to you all next week, as per. And go and play any one of these actually very good games. Good week.
It was a good week, wasn't it?
Plenty to choose from, so get stuck in. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.